This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
This is The Woods with Big Bear Mark and Luke the Wonder Cub. The show made by bears for the bear community, their admirers and supporters all around Australia and the world. Brought to you from Melbourne's Joy 94.9 studios. Woof. Grr.
It is Thursday night. It is 9 o'clock. So that means it is The Woods. And this tonight, I'm alone again. Good old Luke, he came in and did the drive show today with me. We were the CNC Bear Factory. Chris and Cam had gone across to Malaysia for a holiday, so we took over the show. So he's home with his beloved tonight, looking after him because Matt's still recovering. So hi to Matt if you're listening, and hoping you're feeling much better now. And tonight's a very special program. I was very lucky last week to be able to talk to Paul Francis McDermott, better known as Paul Mac. Now, Paul, obviously, he's an Australian electro-pop musician. He's been around for a long time, since the 80s. I shouldn't have sounded so surprised then. He's been definitely on the charts here and played at Joy a lot. He is an out and proud man. He is also, and this is something that I don't know if a lot of people actually know, very involved in the bear scene. And I remember seeing Paul way back in the early 90s at the Beresford in Sydney, which used to be the Bear Bar up there. And Paul became a bit of a staple at the Bear events and DJed and played in Sydney. It was a great time in the 90s in Sydney for that. And, of course, Paul's gone on to do some amazing things. And I was lucky enough to have quite a long chat with him the other day. And the talk about his music, his involvement in bears. So I won't delay much further. I want to get into this. This is my interview with the wonderful Paul Mac. This is Big Bear Mark, and on the line from Sydney, we've got one of Australia's premier music artists. It's Paul Mac. Hey, Paul, how you going?
Hey, Mark, I'm really good. Thanks for having me.
Good, thanks. Now, look, I'm going to get a bit, I think, in depth here, and I want to take you back as well, because We've got an hour, so let's play with it.
Sure.
Now, you grew up, you've been Sydney born and bred, aren't you? You grew up in Sydney.
Yeah, no, totally, totally. I've lived in Sydney pretty much all my life.
Is it true that you grew up in a strict Catholic family?
We are going in depth.
Oh, yeah.
No, absolutely. I'm the youngest of 7 children.
Wow, what... Being now, I hear that you even played like your organ at your local church and did weddings and funerals and things like that when you were growing up.
Absolutely.
How was it growing up in? Because I mean, I grew up in Gosford, which is just north of Sydney. So I probably, and I'm actually only a year younger than you. So how was it for you growing up in Western Sydney in a religious family, and you know, and obviously, you're quite open about your sexuality and being gay. How were those years for you?
It was hard, and you know, I found it pretty torturous, and I didn't come out to my parents until I was like way later, I was like 34 when I had my first like proper boyfriend. So I for a long time was just not out to them at all, you know, in my social life and stuff. I think in my 20s, I always identified as bisexual, and then, you know, sort of hitting 30, it's like, no, I'm pretty gay, I think. So, yeah, and that was pretty torturous and, you know, Catholic and shamey and all that shit that, you know, most of us know about. Yeah. You know, I think it is getting better with kids now, but it was definitely still a big deal then.
Yeah, and I definitely relate to that. I mean, I think these days with the advent of the internet and the accessibility to information, things are definitely getting a lot better these days.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, it's not a freak out if there's a gay singer in a rock band or, you know, one of your friends is gay. You know, like it's so common now, like I don't think it's anywhere near as segregated as it was when we grew up. I think the kids are just probably why, you know, gay venues are struggling because the next generation kind of don't need them.
Yeah, exactly right. Getting back to your music, actually, when I was getting ready for the interview today, one thing I didn't know, you started out with a few bands, but you actually worked with Severed Heads.
Yeah. I've done your research.
Oh, yeah, got to research.
I had my first band, The Lab, and which sort of didn't do much, but it was, you know, an interesting electronic, sort of operatic, arty electronic thing. At the same time, I also had Itchy and Scratchy was happening, and so I was scratchy in that. And my biggest, I think, influence and hero was Tom Ellard from Severed Heads, who was one of the first, you know, electronic bands in Australia, and they had this incredible album called Since the Accident. And I was just, you know, madly in love with that band, and they totally revolutionised the way I sort of thought about music. And, you know, a few years later, we ended up on the same record label with Itchy and Scratchy, so I kind of got to meet him, and then I ended up living around the corner. And then I ended up, you know, running around with cassettes every time I had a new mix. Hey, listen to this song. I was like this annoying neighbor who'd come running around at all hours of the night with a new track for him to listen to. And then later on, he was sort of, the band had been offered some more gigs and he needed someone to play with. So he just asked me to play live with Severed Heads. You know, we did a couple of big out tours and shows.
Yeah,
I did a remix for him for Dead Eyes Open. Yeah,
I was going to mention that because that is one of my favourite songs of all time. I love Dead Eyes Open.
It's pretty fabulous, isn't it?
It is.
I had a look at it the other day, actually. It still feels fresh. The original's amazing.
Yeah, it really is. And I want to talk about Itchy and Scratchy as well, because that's how I got to know your music. I actually had a friend who was really into Itchy and Scratchy, and that's where I discovered Paul Mac, as it were. Okay. Now, and obviously you formed the band with Andy, wasn't it? Andy Ratson?
Yeah. Andy Ratson.
So that was, when was that? That was like the early...
Early 90s.
Early 90s.
The album was like 94, so there was an EP that would have been like 92 or 93 or something. It was like right back then.
Yeah. And look, one thing I want to clear up, because my mate who loved Itchy and Scratchy, he always said that you had to stop being Itchy and Scratchy because The Simpsons did a cease and desist on you. Is that true?
No, it wasn't. I was like, you know, I don't think The Simpsons even knew about us. But it is true that we did rip the name off The Simpsons, because we used to work every Sunday, and when The Simpsons was on every Sunday night, and we'd always stop work to watch The Simpsons, and then, you know, if we're lucky, an Itchy and Scratchy episode would come, and then once we taped that and we used that theme tune for the start of our live show, and we're huge fans.
Yeah. Exactly. Oh, well, he'll be disappointed that the story he's been telling for years is wrong, but that's all right.
No, we ended up changing names because I think we got a bit bored, and Andy was, you know, a bit freaked out by winning the ARIA and kind of wanted to go off in a new direction, so we changed names to Google Names, probably the worst career move ever. And then, it sort of disappeared until 2010 when we came back again with another album.
Yeah.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
For all things bear, cub, otter or wolf, and any other woodland creature, the woods on Joy 94.9.
2001 saw the release of 3,000 Feet High. No, top 30 ARIA, you know, the lead single, Just the Thing with Peter Morris, just simply amazing. And how was that period for you? Because that is, I mean, I'm assuming that's when people started to know who you were, really.
Yeah, I mean, it's all been very, very underground up until that point. I mean, Itchy and Scratchy won an ARIA in 95 or something, and that was the year I did that infamous ecstasy speech, became a bit notorious for that, and then which led to a bit of like remix work. So lots of rock bands were going, "Who's that ecstasy guy? Let's do something with him." And so I did lots of remix, and that's where I met Silverchair and a lot of the rock bands like Powderfinger and Grinspoon and all of that. Did InXS did remixes for all of them, and just sort of disappeared. I moved out of Sydney. I moved up to the Blue Mountains, which is a bit like Dalesford or something. It's sort of like about 2 hours out, and you know, I think that. 3,000 feet high, in fact, above sea level. And just went up there for about 5 years to sort of chill out a bit. And that's when I started writing the album. And I kind of, you know, I was just writing from my heart and doing what I normally do. But just the thing sort of popped out and the sound of breaking up, and they just sort of fell out of me. And I didn't really plan to sit down and write a hit, you know, hit single or anything. It was just, I wrote this song. And that, you know, those lyrics are all real life. They are about, you know, meeting my fuck buddy up at the gay pub who dumped me, and then I was just looking around the bar to pick out anyone who'll be just the thing, you know, for tonight that would work. So, like, all of those lyrics are real, and it's just like a real, still emotional song for me, which I think is why it connected with people.
Yeah, I mean, I have to admit, Just the Thing, I still play on the Woods all the time. We actually play, I think, 8 of your songs on Joy's playlist, which is kind of amazing.
Wow.
Yeah, great. I mean, or remixes. So there's quite, we actually play quite a lot of Paul Mackey, that's for sure. So when that hit, did it change your life? I mean, was going from the guys who won the ARIA in 1995 and then 2001 with that commercial success, was it an impact on your life? Did it really change it?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that summer was bizarre. That summer was really full on when that song was out. It was just everywhere, you know, like I'd just be driving in a taxi and you'd go past 3 different clubs on the way and you could hear it coming out the door. It's like just everywhere. It was like amazing. And that certainly opened a lot of doors and opportunities, you know, for work. And, you know, like, finally, after all these millions of years, a little bit of money came through. Like, not much, but, like, enough to mean that. I mean, I never, ever have aimed to make money. After all, I've just aimed to be able to do this full-time. That's my one goal in life, is just to be able to make a living. And, you know, finally, I can make a living off music and not be on the dole and not be fucking doing boring jobs that will taking me away from the time to make music. So kind of finally, you know, it got there, and it sort of helped me, you know, get a studio together, and I moved back to Sydney, and I've got a room and soundproofed it and bought all this gear and could do what I needed to do. So, you know, and, you know, I suppose it definitely changed, you know, something when you're walking down the street, it's people yelling out at you out of cars and getting on a train, and suddenly people are like, you know, recognizing you and all of that stuff. So that all sort of happened as well, which was kind of freaky.
Yeah, I actually remember 2001, I did the Bear Show at Sleazeball, and you were one of the acts at Sleazeball.
Yeah, we were the closing act.
Yeah, and actually I remember because that day, that Sleazeball, was my birthday. And,
wow.
And at dress rehearsal that afternoon, the stage director got me on stage, and I remember you were there. I think Chrissy Amphlett was there because she was doing an act. And everyone sang me happy birthday. I remember. It was a good memory, that one. But
that was incredible, that Sleazeball.
Wasn't it?
You know, I was just, you know, playing at 8 in the morning and closing the party. It was like, you know, for somebody who had sort of gone for heaps of years and it was a big part of their life. You know, I went to that, my first Mardi Gras when I was like 17 or 18, and was, you know, I'm like, ah, this is whole other world out here, you know, from the lonely boy from the suburbs. It's like, wow. So to actually come back and play was really, you know, that meant a lot to me. It was beautiful.
That's brilliant. Now, I do want to ask you about your collaborations with Silverchair's Daniel Johns, because it seems like you and him, the Dissociates, you know, big part of your musical career. And what can you explain to me about how you met Daniel and what the relationship was like?
Well, when I did that speech in 95, Daniel and Silverchair, they would have been 15 or 16 or something, I think, and they were about to do their second album and they wanted to get remixes done, and Daniel said to his manager, you know, I want to work with that guy. I want to get that guy to do the remix, because he thought I was, you know, and he'd heard Itchy and Scratchy and it really, he loved it. Like, I think it was the first sort of electronic music that he ever listened to. So we ended up, I did some remixes for them, and then their management took me on as manager. So we ended up, you know, we'd always be seeing each other at the office or go to the Arias together or bumping into each other at Christmas parties or whatever. We sort of became mates. And then I think after the second album, I think he was just itchy to sort of spread his wings a little bit from the band. So I was just like, dude, I live up at Katoomba, why don't you just come up and hang out and we'll make some music together with no pressure, you know, no record companies, no release schedules. Because, you know, you've got to remember Silverchair was fucking huge at that point in time.
Yeah, they were. Like,
and so I think it was good that he had somebody who wasn't trying to milk that or anything. It was just like, look, I'm just making music. Do you want to come and hang out with me? You're welcome to. So he did. So he came up to Katoomba and hung out. We did that 5 songs coming together, which was that I Can't Believe It's Not Rock, that EP, which was just sort of experimenting what can we do, you know, it was just like playing around with no real plan. We weren't trying to write an album. We weren't trying to write singles. We were just like trying to, you know, put his headspace with my headspace, and it was super enjoyable. And then after that, he was working on Diorama, that Silverchair album, wanted help with the piano and arranging it because it was like super ambitious and had all those big orchestral things, and he needed help sort of getting the ideas out of his head and onto paper. So I went up to his place and helped sort of get the arrangements out for those songs and help. I played all the piano on it and helped just get the stuff from the piano to the score kind of thing. That was really fun, and that was, you know, an amazing experience. So then we decided to do an album together. So we just did the Dissociatives. I think it was like 10 days in London, and so we did 10 songs. We did one song a day, and that was the album.
Wow.
It was really, really cool. So, I think we just share a joy for music and love doing it together. You know, so then you know, after that, I did Keys on Young Modern and went on tour with them after that. And so, yeah, I don't know. We've always had some kind of link and probably always will.
Yeah. I mean, I actually remember seeing you together at the Rose of Australia once or twice, and I just thought you looked like you had a great partnership with him, like a great relationship in terms of collaboration, and it showed with the Dissociatives as well. Came through.
Yeah, no, you know, probably one of the favourite parts of my career so far, you know, was like that album, was an incredible experience, and, you know, going on tour with that and just hanging out, you know, and it's fun because Daniel would often stay at our place, you know, me and Johnny, when he was in Sydney, and we were like the big gay uncles, you know, who were like just hilarious to be around, you know, which I think for, you know, a young straight guy, that's really funny seeing these, you know, older gay guys who are, you know, hilarious and have a sense of humour and love good music and, you know, are fun to be around. So it was a really fun period. It always is whenever it will happen.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Joy 94.9, The Woods, with Big Bear Mark and Luke the Wonder Cub. Woof. Grr.
And it is Big Bear Mark here, and I'm hoping you're enjoying this interview with Paul Mack. In this next bit of the interview, we get more into depth about his involvement in the bear community. So, without further delay, here's my interview with Paul Mack. I want to ask you also about your association with bears, because, as I said, I mean, I remember seeing you at Bears back at the Beresford. Remember when the Bears were at the Beresford?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, and obviously, you back in the day when I was living in Sydney, you did a lot of stuff with Harbour City Bears. So what draws you to the bear community?
I just found wherever I go around the world, you know, if you end up in a city that you're not familiar with or you don't have any friends in, if you go to a bear night, chances are you'll meet some really nice people because, you know, I find the more commercial gay clubs I don't really relate to. It's all a bit twinky and it's all a bit body beautiful and it's all a bit, the music's a bit cheesy. So it's like, I always find the bear nights are a bit more welcoming, because people aren't as hung up about, you know, body image and other things. And, you know, the older I get and the fatter I get, the more it seems to fit me. But, you know, I just think bears are kind of friendlier. And just a bit more fun, a bit more relaxed. So yeah. I always enjoy bear events and just hanging out and drinking beer with, you know, blokes.
Yeah, exactly right. Now, you actually, before the interview, we were actually just quickly speaking, and you mentioned Johnny there, of course. I take it that's Johnny Seymour?
Yeah,
Butts?
Totally. Yeah.
Yeah. And you said you were doing a bear gig tonight.
It's a Bear Essentials.
Bear Essentials, yeah.
Johnny organised this. I'm just like, yeah, we go along. So I'm going to play it back tonight. It should be fun. And see what's happening for the Mardi Gras season.
Very good.
Some really cool things lined up this year. They're doing, like, going out to one of the islands in the harbour, which people don't often do.
Yeah.
You can get a ferry out there and have a barbecue on the island. It's like, wow. I just saw that in the, you know, gay press the other day. I was like, oh, it was like great fun.
Yeah, they always have a good lineup in Sydney for Bear Essentials. So.
Yeah, and finally, they've got put Harbour City Bears across for Sunday in Newtown now, which is great. So it's good. I live in Newtown, but it's nice having a bear thing over this side of town.
Yeah, at the Bank Hotel. Yes,
yeah,
definitely.
Right. Yeah,
excellent. Well, since your last album, Panic Room, that was back in 2005, we sort of touched on it before. You've done a lot of projects. You've done a heap of remixes. Like Kylie LCD Sound System, Sia, you've written songs for people like Anthony Clear, worked with George Michael. You've done soundtracks for Stage Screen, the Kath and Kim movie. You've done heaps in the last 5 years. How do you? I mean, is there something in the last 5 years that you can look back at it and go, wow, that was amazing?
All of it. It's like, and all of it feeds on itself. I mean, the reason why I say yes to many different projects is because, I mean, I just get bored doing the same thing. I don't want to do pop songs forever. There's only so far you can take it, and you start to repeat yourself. And, you know, I think it's more fun when you keep trying out different projects. And, you know, I'm pretty available. If people have a good idea and, you know, a budget and they come to me, it's like, I'm lucky, you know, I've been really, really blessed in, you know, in my career. And if Kath and Kim will ring me up and go, hey, do you want to do the soundtrack? Or, you know, Sia's record company will reach out to us, and LCD Sound System. That was incredible, that one. And then Bangara, who was like the Aboriginal dance theatre company in Sydney, called me up and asked me to co-write their show last year on Black, which was amazing. And that's possibly one of the most enjoyable things I've ever done, because it was like writing for a dance company, which I hadn't really done before. So I was learning a lot, and I was co-writing it with David Page, who's their composer, and just teaching him stuff and learning stuff off him, and it was just beautiful. It was such a really good experience, and then learning a lot about Indigenous culture at the same time. So that was really special.
Cool. Is there anyone that you've worked with that you've just gone, you're friggin' weird, you're nuts?
I'm not going to tell us?
Oh, okay.
I think a good rule of thumb is the more famous the person, the more weird they are.
Oh, really?
But, if you're super duper famous, nobody ever tells you to shut up.
True.
Because they want to be your friend. So, you know, I think you get weirder and weirder the more famous you get. That's my theory.
Fair enough. Now, I want to talk about your new single and your new album. Your new single's already out. It was out on the 9th of February, called State of War, which is amazing. It's so cool.
Like it?
Yep. It was put on. It's actually in the 6 at 6 here at Joy, which is our new and hot singles, and it got put on the playlist straight away. I love it. I love the song. Now, you're working with Kira Peru from Kira Peru and the Bruises, and DJ Goodwill as well on that one.
Yeah.
Obviously, I think when Paul Mac calls, people would listen. But how was it working with Kira and Goodwill?
Goodwill, he's just one of my favourite DJs around. Like, he's just he's got excellent choice in music, and he got in contact with me and was like, oh, can we just have a jam and try and make some music together? And this is like a few years ago. So he came over to the studio and we sort of hung out for a few nights and we tried a few different ideas. And nothing sort of really, you know, amazing happened. I was like, okay, we'll try again. Something will come that is the right thing. And then this song came along. I co-wrote it with somebody. And then I did my version of it. And I was like, oh, I just need the more, you know, stonking beat. I was like, so I got in contact with Goodwill. I was like, hey, I've got this song. Why don't you try and come up with the beat and the bass and sort of put your input into it? But then he sort of made it way more banging than I would have made it. So it was kind of cool. Like, that's where he came into it. And then I was like, okay, vocalist-wise, I tried, you know, a few different people out. And I met Kira Palu. She now lives in Melbourne.
Oh, really?
Yeah, no, totally. She's a Melbourne girl. She DJs out and around in some of the sort of rock clubs and stuff, and she performs as well. But she's fantastic. She's been down there for a few years, living there. And she came from a sort of more bluesy sort of background. Like, the Brews was kind of this heavy bluesy rock band, but yeah. I really liked her voice, and just got her to try a couple of songs, and it worked really well. So yeah, she ended up singing the single.
Yeah, her voice is just incredible.
It's pretty cool, right?
Like, yeah,
she's got this, when she leans into the notes, it's just this growl, and she's amazing. Like, on stage, she just has this totally unique look and does not give a fuck, and total confidence and, you know, power. She's really cool.
Yeah, because I heard you've done recently a few concerts with her as well around Sydney.
Yeah, a couple of little warm-up gigs to get things going. It's been fantastic. Yeah, no, she's really good.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
And if I can make you to the middle of this tightrope.
Hey, this is Matt Albert from San Francisco.
Well, then you can find a way to make it out here too.
You're listening to The Woods on Joy 94.9.
And if I can make you to the middle of this tightrope.
And it's Big Bear Mark here on a Thursday night. You're listening to The Woods, and we're listening to an interview I have done with Paul Mack, the amazing Australian electroprop musician, singer-songwriter, producer, music remixer. He's done it all. He really has. But he is just about to release his new album, and in this part of the interview, that's what I talked to him about.
Fantastic. Now, obviously, the album is called Holiday From Me. It's coming out on April the 10th. It's actually available pre-order from March the 6th. Now, you've got you're collaborating with some absolutely amazing vocalists on this. Just Megan Washington, Dave Mason, Sean Wright, Brendan McLean, Nathan Hudson. The list goes on. It really does. How long did it take to put this album together?
Well, the last one was 10 years ago, so I suppose this has been going for a while now. I mean, maybe 8 years, you know. Yep. I've been thinking about what it's going to be, and writing songs, trying different singers out. Then I don't really like that direction, so that song will go away, then a new song will come, and a different singer will come, and it just keeps evolving. So it's like new experiences just sort of happen. Like, you know, I rang up people that I really liked. I was already working with Nathan from Stage Out, Nathan Hudson, on some stuff. I was helping Brendan McLean with some of his demos. I really love Dappled Cities, so I rang up Tim from Dappled Cities. I was doing a sort of songwriting random day, because sometimes your publisher just sets you up on these sort of blind dates where you write with different songwriters to see, you know, what would happen. And one of those is Megan Washington.
Oh, fantastic.
And then, I so love that song that I should actually, can I use this on the record? And she's like, totally. So that's how that one happened. And then Sean J. Wright had been working with Stereogamous. We've been recording some other stuff before, but that song felt like the right fit for my album. And Dave Mason, who I was the most excited about, because Dave Mason was from a band called The Reels, who were one of the first sort of synth pop bands in the 80s in Australia.
Definitely.
He's, you know, got the most soulful, melancholic boy that I've always really loved. And I read this song that was my kind of soulful, melancholic song. It's like, there's something missing. But yeah, it's his voice. So I gave him a call and he came over and did it. So I was stoked with that. I was really, really honoured that he said yes.
So now, it's called Holiday From Me. Has that got significance for you, the title of the album?
Yeah, totally. I mean, in a couple of ways, I think it's
a personal thing for me in that, like, I think I just get sick of the way I think so many times, and I'm always, in my life, it's like, when you get your thoughts or what you do in situations all the time, and I suppose that applies to music. I was just getting sick of what I do, and I kind of just wanted to do something different and go in a different direction and have a holiday for myself, kind of thing.
Yeah.
So that's where the song title came from, and I really liked that particular song, and just so I called the album to go with it because it feels like the truth. And I think music can be a holiday as well, where it just takes you out of your self for a second into a different world, so that music itself can be a holiday. So that's, I think it's a sort of double meaning for me.
And I agree, it's like, I love it when music can take you out of yourself for that period of time, and
totally.
I can't wait to hear the full album. I haven't heard it yet, but if State of War is anything to go by, it's going to be absolutely amazing. And as I said, the lineup is just incredible that you've got on there.
Oh, cool.
Now, you're doing gigs for Mardi Gras this year.
Yeah. I don't think I'm DJing at Mardi Gras this year, which should be super exciting.
Yeah.
And what else am I doing for them? Well, that's the only thing I'm doing. I'm filming the big party, which is going to be awesome. So I'm getting my set together at the moment. I'm working out what I'm going to play, and that's going to be pretty exciting. I'm pretty honoured to be playing in it, to be honest.
That's amazing.
It's always, So doing a DJ set this time, so for a good hour and a half or whatever. So instead of just the one little show song, it'll be a nice big slab.
Which hall are you going to be in?
In the Horden.
In the Horden, fantastic.
Yeah, which would be cool.
Very good. And obviously, they can get the album at your website.
Yeah.
Or pre-order it. Yeah.
I think there's probably a link there, I imagine.
What's your website again? It's
paulmack.com.au.
Brilliant. So the rest of the year, obviously you've got the album.
My Facebook page as well.
Oh, okay.
Music page, just the Paul Mack. You search that, you'll find it.
I'll find it. Excellent. So obviously Mardi Gras coming up, but then, and the launch of the album. So I'm assuming you're going to be hugely busy with promoting the album when it comes out. Are you going to be touring or anything later in the year, or what's
happening? I haven't got anything locked yet. I'm just sort of waiting to see what happens, I suppose, with the album, and then we'll make travelling plans after that, I think. But, I would definitely love to at least bring something down to Melbourne for sure.
Well, when you're in Melbourne, please, we'll definitely have you into the studio. I'd love to see you in the flesh, as it were.
Thanks for your support. I mean, you guys were the first to jump on it, so I'm so happy for that. It's great when your community gets behind you and likes what you're doing, and then it's a beautiful thing. So thank you. And thank everyone at the station, please.
Look, not a problem at all. I remember the morning I saw the video clip for the first time a couple of weeks ago, I said to the music director here, I said, are you going to be playing Paul's song? And he was like, yep, it's already on the playlist. So he was on it straight away. He really was.
Well, and if people haven't seen it yet, you can go to the Facebook page and there's a link to the new clip, and it's
a pretty amazing clip as well, I have to say.
Yeah, one friend of ours is from London, Australian guy who's been living in London with his boyfriend for a bunch of years. He did it over there, so we were sort of furiously emailing each other and doing it sort of via the internet. But he's amazing. Yeah, he's got this really good visual language that's pretty exciting.
That's fantastic, Paul. I want to thank you for taking time out to talk to me today. It's been amazing. hopefully we'll get you down here to Melbourne soon. I know you're a Sydney boy and you don't like to leave Sydney, but I'd love to have you there.
You'll see me at the Laird sometime soon.
Oh, I'm sure we will. Thanks very much, Paul, for having a chat with us today.
No worries, mate. Cheers.
Thanks.
You can find more Joycast and show blogs. Go to joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.